Hello and welcome to episode 107 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
And this is Tank.
This week, we're talking about the Census Divinitatis, digital missionaries, and Anchored North. Without further ado, let's get started. So guys, this one is really just my brain synthesizing a lot of information, and it might be doing so wrongly. So I'm going to offer this up to you guys, see what you think about it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. Does that sound okay?
Sure.
So I've been thinking about this idea from John Calvin called the Census Divinitatis, which just means sense of divinity. It's basically like an innate sense of divinity that all men possess an intuitive awareness of God. The way he put it was, here's a short quote, that there exists in the human mind, and indeed by natural instinct, some sense of deity, we hold to be beyond dispute, since God himself, to prevent any man from pretending ignorance, has endued all men with some idea of his own Godhead. This is not a doctrine which is first learned at school, but one as to which every man is, from the womb, his own master, one which nature herself allows no individual to forget. And I don't know if it's loosely based off of Augustine's idea that our hearts are restless until they find rest in God, but it certainly is similar to what we're seeing in Romans 1, that everyone by nature knows God, and that they've forsaken the worship of God for the worship of the creation of creatures, and in such a way that they are without excuse. We all know God from the womb in condemnation, and that's why we need to hear the gospel so we can know him, that there might not be condemnation, that we can be saved, justified from that. So Calvin is teaching that everybody, regardless of Christian or not, has this sense of God. Now, I'm thinking about that in the context of my job in an industry which is typically, on average, filled with people who are either atheistic or scientific naturalists or something like that. So they're going to be pretty anti-supernatural on average, not everybody, but on average in the industry that I'm in. And yet, it seems like there's a lot of hype over things like artificial intelligence and machine learning and quantum computing and cryptocurrency, which is kind of not really in this area of conversation, but just along the lines of all these things that I don't really even understand well enough to talk about. But particularly with the idea of machines learning and there being artificial intelligence, it seems like there is this overriding fear that Terminator is going to happen and the world's going to be destroyed by AI. You can even think of somebody as intelligent as Elon Musk who thinks that, right? Like he wants us to legislate now so that that doesn't happen. And I'm thinking that from a completely naturalistic perspective, I don't understand how that makes sense unless there's this sense of something greater than us out there. So I'm trying to put these two things together, and I'm wondering if the way that someone who is more atheistic or naturalistic can sort of want there to be this this greater artificial intelligence, machines are learning type of thing. It is maybe explained by this idea that because we're image of God, we're trying to find meaning and we're trying to be connected to this greater reality, even though our evolution tells us that we're just evolved from slime.
What are you saying is filling the hole exactly? The AI thing. So it's some kind of other intelligence, some kind of other existence that's outside of ourselves.
Right. Yeah. It's like if I accept naturalistic presuppositions, then I don't understand. If that's my starting place, I don't understand how I could land in, I need to be afraid of computers taking over the world. Because you have to, we essentially would have to be able to create consciousness, which, like, I don't even think naturalism can account for our consciousness, but we essentially would have to create consciousness for machines so that they could make their own independent decisions, so that they could learn things, which is the way we talk about it. And in the conversation, we certainly anthropomorphize, I get, so that we can sort of talk about it, but sometimes it just goes so far, like sort of the AI is going to take over the world train of thought.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't understand how you're getting there. Like that seems like something I, as a Christian, could think might be possible, but then I go a different direction and talk about the creator-creature distinction. It just seems so supernatural to me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think, I mean, when you say, I don't know how naturalistic materialists can account for our own consciousness, I don't know that I agree with you there. I mean, I do agree with you. I think it's clear that our consciousness and our level of the way that we relate as human beings and stuff is something that is different to all other creatures and is therefore given by God. But I guess they would say that, you know, bacteria is alive, and so if bacteria come together and form something more complex and it keeps getting more complex, then eventually you have a brain, and a brain can have consciousness. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know that consciousness would necessarily be tied to supernatural or spiritual in a naturalistic, materialistic worldview. And I think they would probably say that you can have that without having any kind of spiritual being or connection involved.
And I guess that's sort of the cosmological argument, right? Like, how does consciousness come from non-consciousness?
Sure.
And yeah, I'm just reapplying that to here, right? Like, how does machine that does not have consciousness all of a sudden have consciousness? You know what I mean? That sounds supernatural to me.
Mm, okay. I guess I hadn't thought of it as being supernatural, because it's not consciousness in when you're talking about a machine.
I agree.
In terms of...
And yet that's the way we talk about it.
Well, I mean, you can turn a machine off, whereas consciousness you can't turn off until you kill someone.
I agree.
Like, you can turn a machine on and off at different times, and the machine is just doing what it was built to do, which is being on or being off. A person is always conscious, even, I guess, when they're asleep, they're kind of out to it. But you know what I mean? Like, there's this continuing state of being a person that doesn't go away until your body dies. I think the bigger issue for me is that we even if we could create a level of artificial consciousness, which I think is what artificial intelligence is, it's not an actual conscious person. It's a machine that is built to behave like a person when it's turned on and programmed to do certain tasks. What we will never be able to properly create or program in one of those machines is conscience. And I think that's where the fear of people like Elon Musk and others comes from, is that they kind of think, well, we can already program machines to do certain things and to improve at what they do and to learn, you know, from interactions or from feedback how to do things differently. But to then be able to make moral choices or know right from wrong in every situation, or, you know, to be able to have some kind of guiding moral compass, that I don't think you'll ever be able to build that into a machine in a way that's as innate as it is for us as humans. You know what I mean? Like, I was talking to an atheist on Facebook in the last week, and they were saying they believe that there's they're not sure if absolute truth exists. They kind of think at this stage that it doesn't, but they have some feeling that it does. And so, like, I was able to respond to them by saying, well, I believe that you feel that way because you're made in the image of God, right? But anything we create as creatures, like you said, because we're not the creator, we're creatures creating other creatures or creating other things, won't have that same innate level of, image of God, I guess, imprinted on it. So, the consciousness thing, though, is still, I think, a question mark. Like, I'm not sure. I guess they would have an explanation for that from that worldview. Whether it's just not a satisfying one to me as a Christian, that's all.
I do think, just for clarity's sake, there is a world of difference between, like, for example, machine learning and artificial intelligence. So,
sure, yeah.
And I acknowledge that. I'm just sort of bundling them all together for the sake of conversation. But just exclusively artificial intelligence for a second. I agree with everything you said about it, and that we're not going to be able to build something that has its own consciousness, because we can't create that. Mm-hmm. And I had recently a non-Christian friend about machine learning said, whenever we understand what's actually happening, we'll realize that that name is not suitable for it. That it's not machines actually learning. You know, which I think is a more consistent approach to understanding this. And yet that's not the vast majority of the way people talk and think about it, as far as my own experience confirms. So it just, and I don't know that this is what Calvin was talking about necessarily, but I'm just wondering. And so maybe this is just another episode in the saga of me trying to understand how to meaningfully talk about these odd things like AI and machine learning. But it does strike me as interesting and altogether odd that from one starting place, you would land in this conclusion. So I don't know, Tank, any thoughts? You're maybe more technical than I am even. So love to hear what you think about this.
I don't have any key thoughts, I don't think. One thought just from a long time ago when we talked about artificial intelligence destroying the world. One thing I was left with, I think it was a long time ago. I remember feeling like people like Elon Musk didn't really think that it was going to be like a Terminator-like apocalypse where robots gained sentience and made decisions to destroy the world. But it was more like the way people used artificial intelligence that governments would like turn on a bot to kill all the redheaded people, you know, and they would just start and turn on a lock that wouldn't turn it off. And they would just go around killing all the redheaded people. And then, World War, whatever number we're on at that time would start. And then the world would destroy. That's my memory. But I'm sure that's a side note just because some people do believe that robots will gain consciousness, I'm sure. Even if it's not Elon Musk, which it may be him too.
Yeah, and sentience may be a better word there, Tank. I appreciate you pointing that out.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, as far as how the desire to create sentience or even the ability to believe that sentience could come into existence speaks to us being made in the image of God and having that understanding that that there is a God.
You're saying you don't see the connection between those two things?
I don't see it well enough to be able to explain it to somebody.
Well, that's kind of how I feel too, having just said what I said.
And clearly I'm in the same boat because I couldn't clear it up at all.
Yeah. So if it's there, I couldn't show it to somebody.
My point is, I think, that we live as if we wish the natural conclusion of evolution were not true. And I wonder if this is one example of that. So we live as if we are not just highly evolved slime, right? We treat each other with respect. We expect respect from other people. We have love for our family members. That, I do think, is part of the indelible image of God upon us. And I'm just wondering if this desire to find some greater sense of being, if you will, this sentience or consciousness, and be able to create that and be afraid of that, I wonder if that is part of this as well. And I don't know. I would love to have some help on this from our brilliant friends in the Slack as well.
Our sponsor this week is Missional Wear, your Reformed theology gift shop. Missional Wear prints apparel, drinkware, and accessories with beautiful artwork of historical creeds, quotes, and faces of various reformers. And what I'd like to talk about today is their set of flasks. These are beautiful flasks. You've got leatherette flasks and flask sets, and they've got several designs for you to choose from. The sets include a funnel as well for filling your flask, because who wants to, hold your, just carefully tip your whiskey right into the flask. That never turns out well. Your whiskey goes everywhere, and it's nobody has fun with that. They've got many designs, including faces of, say, Martin Luther or John Calvin, phrases like post tenebris lux. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but, if you know what it means, you can, you know what I'm talking about. Or even 500 years of the Reformation. They've got a fantastic design for that. And this is the end of that 500th year. We're going into the 501st. So check those out. Missional Wear has been making things since 2010. They've grown an impressive library of designs and items that will appeal to any theologian, not just flasks. So to grab some apparel, drinkware, or accessories for yourself, or even just to browse their gorgeous designs, check them out at missionalwear.com to get your lifestyle on mission to the glory of God. Thanks to Missional Wear for sponsoring Tech Reformation.
A few weeks back, when we were talking about can you do church online, I think I mentioned somehow in the conversation the concept of doing mission work online came up. And I know both Ben and Greg had some questions about that. And so just to reiterate a little bit of what was said in the conversation before they asked their questions. Yeah, I think it would be a cool opportunity, not for necessarily a whole church even, but maybe a small group within a church, or some people, probably not an individual, but just some people that enjoy video games and this desire to reach certain people within the video game, like an online game like World of Warcraft or Star Wars, The Old Republic, whatever, Final Fantasy 14. And so the idea would be to log on to either make a community or join a community, build friends, and just through the shared time that you have on the game with other people, be able to serve them within the game, be able to speak the gospel into their lives within the game, be able to show love for each other within the game, and to reach out to these people. And one reasoning I had behind that was an experience I had in college, which I was able to actually be I was not a Christian at this time, but I was able to be more of who I was myself in the game. And I was actually sharing my opinions and showing what I thought about things and being vocal, which I was very silent in real life. And so this may be a place where some people who would be too afraid to have any interaction with any community, you would actually be able to have an interaction with those kind of people if you are meeting them in the digital world. And so I was just saying that while I wouldn't base a whole church strategy on it, I think that would be a really cool thing for some people to do if they felt God were calling them to it. So with that being said, do you guys have any questions still lingering about that?
I would love to see if we're on the same page here in a few definitions of terms.
Mm.
Just maybe as we start this conversation, trying to have the second stage of this conversation about digital missionaries, let me ask you if you can agree with this, Tank, and you as well, Craig. The traditional and historic, then this is, by the way, is from a little book that just came out called Missions, How the Local Church Goes Global by Andy Johnson, which is an excellent book. I read it a couple of weeks ago. Anyway, he says, the traditional and historic use of missions, scare quotes around that, meaning the unique, deliberate gospel mission of the church to make disciples of all nations. And then he says that the traditional definition of missionary is someone who does evangelism that takes the gospel across ethnic, linguistic, and geographic boundaries, that gathers churches and teaches them to obey everything Jesus commanded. Would you agree with that definition of missions and missionary?
For me, I'm not super set on that necessarily. I'm okay. Fine. I normally clarify cross-cultural missionary because many people have that phrase, like everyone's a missionary, you know, in
right.
their head. And it's a definition of terms, you know. And I think if people are on the mission, which is the Great Commission, you know, and they want to say, I'm doing a mission to my neighborhood, or I'm doing a mission to this school, or whatever, I'm not going to tell them otherwise, you know. But I do think there is clarifying cross-cultural missionary and some differences that would entail for, and some different challenges and even different strategies that would entail for a cross-cultural missionary is a good clarification to make.
So he's, yep. You're very astute. He's exactly dealing with that phrase that everyone's a missionary. And that's what he's speaking to. You don't disagree with the definition of missions. It sounds
what
like.
What was that again? Being on God's mission.
The unique, deliberate gospel mission of the church to make disciples of all nations.
Yeah, that sounds awesome to me.
But you do disagree maybe a little with the definition of missionary that takes the gospel to across ethnic, linguistic, and geographical boundaries.
I guess I would disagree if someone were to say that's the only meaning of that word.
Yeah, so Tank's saying
okay
that's
with
a,
people
using that's a group of missionaries. Way. Yeah, but it's not the only type. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then that helps me understand what we mean by digital missionary. If we just mean, and maybe I would want to say, maybe this has its own problems, but how about digital Christian?
Yeah, it's fine with me.
I mean, just because what it sounds like you're saying is just being a Christian online, right? So wanting to love God and love neighbor online and preach the gospel when able.
Yeah, and I think even in everything I had said just a moment ago, I don't know if I ever used the term digital missionary whenever I was speaking. So, yeah, I probably wouldn't call them digital missionaries. I would just say, yeah, people being on mission on the internet, like Christians being on mission on a game. So, yeah
cool.
But I think the on mission part is the key bit, right? Like we've talked heaps of times about what it means to be a Christian online and the fact that, like Ben, for example, you just said being a Christian online and preaching the gospel when you're able or something like that, right? Whereas a missionary is kind of, I think, kicks the preaching the gospel bit up a gear in terms of evangelism is like their key focus.
Their mission.
Whereas I think... Yeah, exactly. It's the key part of the mission. Whereas for a lot of us, I think we see being a Christian online as kind of, we kind of take that when able phrase and sort of rely on, I might be speaking for myself only, but I probably treat that as like a secondary thing. So it's more important that I love people and respond gracefully and graciously, do those kinds of things and, you know, guard my own internet habits and those kinds of things, as like being a good Christian online. And then there's this thing that I can do when the opportunity arises, which is, spreading the gospel. Whereas a missionary would say like they're either equal or like the evangelism is even like more of the priority, like, because when you're doing that, you should still be being a good Christian. You know, you're not going to evangelize someone and be smacking them with hate or, you know, frustrated responses all the way through. But I feel like for missionaries, you know, people like Tank, like cross-culture missionaries that I've come across in my life, they just have this intensified passion for personal evangelism.
Maybe you would call it a gift of evangelism.
Yeah. And so I'm like, I guess what I'm saying is like in one of these games that Tank's talking about, I think maybe a digital missionary is someone who actually goes into the game with, and Tank was saying like, you wouldn't want to make it a whole church strategy, but it could be a strategy for an individual or a small group of people to actually go into the game with that as one of your goals in playing the game, not as kind of just a natural byproduct of, oh, I happen to be in this game and I'm a Christian, so I therefore may end up having some kind of positive influence. You're actually going in with the intention of, I'm quite likely to find some people in here who I'm going to be interacting with who need the gospel, so how can I get that to them?
I'm really glad you brought up that clarification, Craig, just because, so I know you weren't saying this. I don't think that evangelism is something separate from being a Christian. It's part of what it means to be a Christian. At the same time, I feel like the tension you're bringing up is one that I live in, which is I feel like I legitimately could drive every single conversation I have to the gospel. So some of those would be a lot more ridiculous than others. Maybe I'm leaving a restaurant and I grab a toothpick and I say, huh, this toothpick is made out of wood. You know what else was made out of wood? The cross of Christ. Let me tell you about your need to be reconciled with God. I could do that every single time. I really could. I could probably find a way, and I'm sure you guys could do that too if you wanted to. It doesn't take a whole lot of creativity. The question is that actually helpful at all? Or are you just the annoying guy who always only wants to talk about one thing and doesn't seem to have a life, right? And like sometimes even when it doesn't make sense. So if people want to stop listening to me, I feel like I've done somewhat of a disservice, obviously noting that their natural state is hostility towards God. And so by nature, they don't want to listen to me. But there's also interpersonal things you can do to drive wedges between friendships very naturally. So that's all I meant by when able is not never sharing the gospel, but not taking every single conversation there, which I think we also could do. There is some balance even in that.
Sure.
Would you guys disagree with that at all or want to clarify?
I don't know if I disagree. The one thing I was thinking as you were sort of going through that example of the toothpick, which I'm sitting at a desk right now, and the desk is made of wood, so I could, you know, I'm sure I could
preach the gospel, man. Road. Come on. I will listen and I will receive it.
That's okay. No, but I think, you know, sort of comparing that to what we're talking about with video games and stuff like that, maybe with mission work, I don't want to say the value in it, but like, I think there's an important aspect of, like what Tank's doing right now is he's not just walking out into the streets of Japan and grabbing people or, you know, gently coaxing people to sit down on a park bench with him and then saying, let me tell you about you.
Right. He's building relationships.
He's building relationships. And when you build relationships, you get to know whether or not people already know the gospel.
Right.
Whether they are somewhat open to the gospel, whether they are completely hostile to it. And then from there, you might change your strategy of how you interact with that person on mission. And so I think that's maybe an important clarification is just like the when able thing is not just when able, but it's how. Like, so if you're just leaving a restaurant and saying, hey, here's a toothpick, I want to accost the waiter who's standing at the door showing people to their seats and give him the gospel. You don't know him for a bar of soap. He might be already a devout Christian and you're just telling him that he's a sinner in need of a savior. And he's like, but I've already got a savior. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's not, what you're telling him isn't wrong. It's not wrong at all. He does need a savior and he is a sinner, but you maybe could have done that differently or not felt then, you know, the compulsion to do that if you already knew him and knew where he was at in his walk with God. Maybe there's other ways that you could focus that evangelism that isn't on the person who's already a believer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I think it's an act of loving your neighbor to want to get to know them, for sure. And so I'm on board with what you just said. And we do have, and this is sort of more of the tension, like we have a message that is urgent. If people don't hear it and repent and believe, they will die in their sins and they will be separated from God for eternity. They will perish. That's what Jesus says. And so the message is urgent to the extent that I can go interrupt someone's tennis game at the park. Like the message is that urgent. And yet it's still rude to go interrupt someone's tennis game at the park. So like there's a tension to manage there.
But again, if you know the person playing tennis, it's going to be better than if they're a complete stranger. They're going to have more grace with you.
So I would interrupt your tennis game, Craig, you and Tank, to tell you the gospel.
That's fine. Did you get the tennis game thing from Francis Chan? Because I reckon he talks about that in...
No, I was at a park one time. I was in a group of people. Okay. We were doing evangelism at this park. And I said, let's go talk to these people playing tennis. And they said, whoa, hold up there, Sparky.
Because I'm pretty sure Francis Chan talks about, like, if hell is real, which it is, then... You know, how can I just go and play tennis with my non-Christian neighbor when there's so much more important things that I could be doing, you know, and talking to them about and stuff like that. Anyway, just reminded me of that.
I do want to clarify one thing on just what I mean whenever I say, like, do mission online or even to community or high school or neighborhood, you know, like, I don't want to, and I don't think you guys would agree with what I'm about to say, but like I don't want it to sound like it's something only someone with the gift of evangelism could do. And I also don't want it to sound like I'm talking about logging online and having a key spammer that just types the gospel really fast over and over again, just like people selling stuff. Well, one, a person with the gift in evangelism is in the equipping category, so he's supposed to equip the saints, depending on how you read that. Anyway, so he's supposed to be training people to be doing that as well, of course. So whenever I picture it, let's use the game as the example. Like, say this is a group of 3, 4, or 5 people. They're in a logon. And those they meet, they're going to be playing. They may join, say they join a clan that has like 100 people in it. Those that are playing in the clan, they'll get together outside the game, these 4 Christians, say, and they'll pray by name for those people that they meet. And they'll discuss, how can we love this person and serve this person in a way that they experience the love of Christ? And what opportunities do we have to speak the gospel into their life? And so maybe they play some more and then they hear like, hey, this guy's struggling with such and such. And so they begin praying and they let that guy know, hey, we're praying for that specifically. And then the guy's like, wow, I'm this changed. That must have been God. And, you know, like this isn't just like you guys were saying, we're just going to play this game and then hope that someone comes to Christ. But it's to be on mission in the game would be strategically working together, praying together, talking about how can we actually reach these people that we're interacting with? What clan do we feel God is leading us to join, to meet with? How can we serve these people, whether giving them a special item in the game or sending them real money over PayPal or whatever? You know, it's like, it's intentionally thinking. And I think that's true if you want to do that for a neighborhood or a high school or anything. Like, it's more of just like you guys are, more than just like you guys were saying, of just living life, but it's together strategically praying and thinking, like, how can we really effectively reach these people that God has called us to with the gospel? And so, you know, that's all I'm doing in Japan, and that's what hopefully we can all be doing, whether individually or within our small group, a community on community. So,
yeah, so in relation to that topic of digital missionaries, I kind of came across something this week. I think it was Jeff Durbin that shared it on his Facebook wall. And said he thought it was a cool idea. And I just picked up on it because of what we've been talking about recently. It's a website called anchorednorth.org. And it's a group of people. And what they do is basically video tracts. So that's T-R-A-C-T-S, not T-R-A-C-K-S. So their catchphrase is share a video, share the gospel. They've got a whole bunch of videos. They've got one called Initiated at 15. I'm not sure what that's about. It might be gangs or something. Homosexuality was my identity. One way to heaven. Do aborted babies go to heaven? I forgave my rapist. I deserve hell. What is truth? 10 out of 10 people die. There's a whole bunch of videos. People like Ray Comfort and John MacArthur. And just some other people that I don't recognize are in these videos. And from what I understand, in general, most of them are testimony videos. So they're people sharing their own story in narrative form, and they're all short. So they're designed to be shared online to people with short attention spans who don't necessarily have a lot of time and are just kind of looking to get to the next thing. The idea is that you can actually sort of sponsor a campaign, and there's different amounts that you can sort of put towards it in terms of money. And they give you like an approximate reach of people. So the base level is, it's called their Solo Gratia plan, which they say reaches between 650 and 6,500 people, costs about $100. And, you then choose a video from their video library, then it basically shares it to social media platforms, and then they give you statistics and like a rundown of how many people watch the video and for how long and that kind of thing, to kind of see what sort of impact it had. But the idea is really to spread the gospel through story in a short online video format. So, yeah, I just wanted to see what you guys thought of this. It seems like a kind of a cool idea. It's the first time I've come across it. And then when I was looking through the website, I was like, why has this not been done before? Maybe it has, and I've just not realized. But it seems like a smart thing to do, kind of leveraging video as a key communication tool with paid social media advertising that's going to be there anyway. So why not do it in a way that's actually being useful for the gospel. What do you guys think? Have you seen this before? Have you heard of something similar? Is this another way that we can all participate in the digital missionaries thing, or is it just throwing money at a website and hoping for the best?
It seems really fortunate that this topic was paired with the digital missionaries topic. And I don't know if it's just that I'm thinking of it slightly like emphasizing a different thing because we just finished talking about the idea of digital missionaries. But I feel like one of the things that I immediately thought when I heard you describing it was about the importance of relationship in disciple making. Because if we're on mission, the mission involves teaching everything that Jesus commanded. So in one sense, there's no way to reduce this into 140 characters if disciple making involves your whole life, right? Like if from the moment you become a Christian to the moment you die, you're continually learning everything that Jesus commanded, then there, it's almost like there's not a way to reduce that in one sense. So like a 90-second video, in as much as it introduces someone to the gospel for the first time, is great. But if we think that's all there is to it, then I feel like we've really missed it. And I know you weren't saying that, but it just, in light of Tank's topic, I just feel like I was reminded of the importance of the longevity of the mission as well. That we're not just reaching, but we're teaching as well.
I think though that, you know, there's a lot of steps on that chain and, you know, us as Christians can be involved in many parts of that, whether it's, you know, people. I mean, I know you do street evangelism and I do street evangelism. And so maybe it is just for those people who have literally never heard the gospel and they're hearing it for the first time. And that moves them a little bit. At least they've heard it once. Or those people who have heard the gospel, but they still think, you know, Christianity is about being a good person and you get to heaven by being a good person. And you're actually like, actually, no, that's not at all.
That's the opposite of what we're saying.
And then they're like, oh, okay. And so they've moved a step forward. And so, while I definitely agree that, we should be very active in bringing someone, to teach them all that Jesus has commanded. I think it's okay to do small touches too. And so, yeah, I think while this definitely shouldn't be all we are doing and call it good. All right, we've done our evangelism and our discipleship by sending money to this website. I think giving people more opportunities to hear, to come across the gospel and be and let the Spirit do what he does with when they hear truth, the more the better. And if we have money to give and we want to give it somewhere, I think that's awesome. Like I know we can sponsor children all over the world who are in poverty, and that sends people in there to give them food and clothing and also teach them the Bible. I think this is just another opportunity of a place to give our money that can spread the gospel. So,
yeah, I think that's always good. I wonder, Tank, if your thought on that is that some people are going to be better and should therefore focus on the evangelism side, and other people are going to be better and should therefore be focused on the discipling side. If I can kind of pull those two apart just for a second. Is that kind of what you're saying or not at all? Maybe I totally misunderstood.
I'm saying do everything. And it's okay if you don't do everything with one single person is kind of what I'm getting at. Like, yeah, you may see someone come to Christ, but then you actually never interact with them again. But you should also be discipling someone. You know, like, I'm not saying like, oh, you came to Christ. All right, bye. We should try. But say they come to Christ and they live an airplane away and you get them connected to a local church, you know, like, and that's the last thing you do with them. Like, you didn't fail because you didn't.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah.
And so that's the kind of this right here. You know, you provided the money for them to hear the gospel, and that was one step closer than they were beforehand. And so it's not a failure that you didn't stick with them.
Yeah. And I'm certainly not saying don't do this Anchored North thing just because it's not focusing on discipleship. So you're not saying do the one at the expense of the other. Neither am I.
I would agree with all of that. On their website, they've got under what we do, there's three links. And the bottom one is church partnership. And they talk in there about the fact that this is meant to be like a street evangelism type thing. And so you can even target the advertising and stuff to like an area within a 30-mile radius of your local church, for example. And they're also saying that they actually want to get in contact with, like, they've got another link from that says church partnerships. So they, like, why do church partnerships? So they're kind of totally on board with the idea of evangelism doesn't just mean giving the gospel and walking away. It is also about discipleship, and they give scriptural backing for that and stuff on their website. So I don't know exactly how their church partnerships work 100%, but they certainly seem to be sort of heading in that direction and totally agreeing with everything that was just said about the fact that that's, you know, just as important as sharing the gospel in the first place. Although I guess discipleship is something that happens once, you know, generally the order of things is that someone sort of hears the gospel, comes to faith and is then discipled in what does this mean for my life?
You got to have evangelism before you can have discipleship. Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. So anyway, I agree with everything else that people have said about, like, let's not make this the only way we do evangelism either. There's other super valid ways of doing it. But yeah, being able to target, you know, things quite specifically in terms of certain messages to certain groups of people online and things like that. And knowing that they are also wanting to sort of bring it into the real relationship side of things. I don't know, seems like an interesting cause to me, an interesting way of getting involved. And so, yeah, just encourage people to check it out and make their mind up for themselves as to whether or not they think it's a good idea.
If you would like to connect with us, you can do so by jumping in our Slack workspace. Sign up at slack.techreformation.com.
You can also contact us on Twitter at techreformation.
Or our website at techreformation.com.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back. No, no, I ain't looking back. No, no, I ain't looking back. No, 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 I ain't looking back. I made my choice.